just an electric show for you here today as Nate Tice stops by for episode one of the Fantasy Film Room. We talk about why you should care about teams playing more multi-tight end, multi-running back, fullbacks, all these heavy personnel packages, and why it will benefit some of the fantasy receivers you care about this year. And James Cook, is he a big winner from the Bills' offensive transformation into more of a run-focused unit? Yeah, you heard me say that right. James Cook, run-focused unit, Buffalo Bills. So much to get into, including a Thursday night and Friday night football preview. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, September 5th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do that for episode one of the Fantasy Film Room here on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast feed. It is the one and only Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Man. Now that when you say Fantasy Film Room and before the show, you made the BoJack Horseman crossover episode joke.
Yes.
The title of the show is like a tag team in wrestling come together, where you have your gimmick and my gimmick come together. It's the Fantasy Film Room. This is just, it's perfect. Like, so you just, hey, like, this is our gimmicks. We're coming together. We get to talk about this every single week. I love it because we get to kind of do a 1-2 every week. As we're potting on Tuesdays during the week, and then we get an idea, we go like, yeah, let's hit that up tomorrow. It's going to be great. I can't wait for the season to start. I can't wait for ball to start. That's what's going to be so exciting about all this.
Yeah, our real pre-show conversation was mostly just the two of us being, when can we get some, when do we get Please. The games in? Like, and we know Please. When they're starting, but like, my God, I'm ready for new data. I'm ready for things to react to, because this is essentially our 100th preview episode, just probably even me and you together at this point, since, we started Football 301, since I've started having on you on this podcast a lot. So we've potted together plenty already at this point. I've certainly, and you have otherwise too, previewed the season about a billion times. But we're going to do kind of one last season look ahead here for episode one of the Fantasy Film Room. But let me explain kind of the flow of this show and what people can expect every single week. We're basically going to break this in to three parts. The first part, I'm going to pick sort of a trending topic from the fantasy world for Nate and I to both dive into the film and sort of from an X's and O's perspective, try to tell you why something is happening. I think that the biggest thing for fantasy analysts and NFL analysts as a whole is to try to inform the fan, like, hey, not just like what is happening. Anyone can hop on a mic and tell you, this guy scored this many points and it was good or it was bad, but we want to dive into why and the process of that. And especially some of these big picture things. And we're going to have one of those topics today. I think it's going to be even better again, once we have games to react to, when some player that you or I, Nate, we're inevitably super high on has some, poor showing in week one. It's going to be great to be able to break that down here on this particular pod. So kind of that's more so what we're going to do. But today we'll take it very big picture. In part two, this is where Nate is just going to absolutely cook. He's going to have one thing that he's nerding out on. Again, it's more of a season preview type thing in this one, but it'll be more so game based once they kick off. And then one thing he wants people to like, because if I know my guy, Nate Tice, you love some weird stuff, man, and some things that some things that other people maybe aren't that into, but you're going to try to, in this segment, to convince people that they should like this thing that you like, a little bit fantasy hipster of you, which I think will be pretty cool. And then in the final part, we're just going to break down the Thursday night football game and do some props, do some big picture talk again. But that's sort of how the flow of this show will be every single week.
Yeah, as someone that tries to get everyone in my inner circle, or even like, I don't even say inner circle, I'll say medium circle, into board games and into schlocky movies, sometimes a little schlocky plus, I'll say, and really just going, no, watch, it's good. I trust me, it's good. Total Clockwork Orange, eyes open, putting eye drops in, making sure that they see what I'm seeing, like, do you see that whole South Park segment right there? That's exactly how I feel with some of this that's just going through the year. But I'm excited. It's a great way also, like you said, this pod to go, oh, yeah, we're really high on this guy and he doesn't have a good week, and go, this is why I was not wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's not my fault.
You guys have to listen for 5 minutes. That's it. And I just put the chart together, my own Dennis system, just to make sure that everything's good. But no, I'm very, very excited for that. I'm excited for you guys for – listening to this vinyl record that I'm really into. And then, you know, you can smile and nod. Maybe you do like that note that this musician hit or this play that this offensive coordinator called. But I'm glad we get to do this, kind of tie it in. Maybe some tangible stuff that you can use for fantasy purposes.
As a current NFL Network guy, Nate Tice, I'll say as a former, we're doing two former NFL Network callbacks from my days there, which is one, you do truly sound like a fantasy hipster. Matt Franciscovich, my old buddy, and I used to do a segment on TV called The Fantasy Hipsters, where we basically like listen to this vinyl record and cold brew and IPA and all the typical hipster layup jokes with my big rimmed glasses at the time that I'm still have.
Oh, mine right here.
Yeah, I still have the damn headshot on Yahoo. I haven't worn my glasses the whole time, and it looks good. No, it's horrific. And then the second thing is, we used to play a game on the old podcast called "Has Harmon Seen It?" Because you haven't quite figured this out about me yet. You will over the course of the year. My movie literacy is very, very, very low. So you'll have to culture me throughout the course of this season as we try to culture the listeners.
Yeah, especially coming from my old co-host Robert, who was like, sometimes I'd throw some at him and he actually would pick up what I was dropping, and I would always just be like, god dang, like, this is not like, man, I thought I threw that 102 mile an hour fastball by you, and he'd still know it. So this is good. I actually like this, because I even said I've found this with Charles too. Charles's movie filmography is all over the place as well. So yeah, a bobbing and weaving with the references. I have to look at maybe box office and then go from there with all my my movie references. Go start at the top and maybe not go with, you know, Clockwork Orange or, you know, something a little bit more obscure in the 90s that is more up my alley.
Well, I always say when people give me flack for not watching enough movies, I always say, I don't have time to go see films. I'm too busy watching the film, baby. So that is a perfect transition into our show today as we get into episode one of the Fantasy Film Room. So my trending topic for us to talk about today, and again, this is more macro than I will usually go with this, because like I said, I do want to focus this on underperforming or overperforming trends once we kind of get game data here, we get actual current game film to watch. But I wanted to talk about just trying to pitch right down the middle here for Nate Tice. I wanted to talk about teams going trending towards more heavy personnel and how that impacts fantasy players, because I do think this is a really big deal. So I looked at a lot of first down data for this to just try to get teams' intent with some of this stuff here. So last year in 2023, only five teams used 11 personnel on at least 60% other first down snaps. Those teams were the Rams, the Panthers, the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Colts. Pretty mixed bag, honestly, in terms of offensive efficiency. You got one team, as Sal Vetri pointed out on the show yesterday, averaged 4.1 yards per play last year, which is not just the worst in the NFL last year, it was the worst the last 4 years by a lot. Typically, the lowest in the NFL, Nate, is like 4.6, 4.7. The Panthers set some new all-time lows last year. So and then you have the Rams, good offense in Cincinnati. You know, like I said, mixed bag with the Steelers and the Colts and things like that. But this was down from 12 teams in 2022. And one of the things that I looked at this on the inverse here is that it's honestly some of these really good teams who are making the most or perhaps best use of heavy personnel on again, this is just first down data, but these trends typically hold for these teams throughout all downs here. The Packers on first down ranked third with 32% of their snaps coming in 12 personnel. The Chiefs led the NFL, and as you and I know this from our Super Bowl conversation, Nate, with 9% of their plays in 13 personnel, and they were also top 12 in 12 personnel. The Dolphins, the 49ers, Ravens, and the Texans were the only teams at or above 29% or more in 21 personnel, which is two backs and one tight end. So the fullbacks are back, baby, and the 49ers and Ravens also were top three in 22 personnel, which is just one wide receiver, two backs, two tight ends. So I say all this to say, Nate, to ask you, why are teams moving more in this direction from a schematic standpoint? Since it does seem like they are.
It's the first thing is when you are an 11 personnel, unless you do, and this will get to what the Rams have done the last few years, that much has been made about what the Rams have done with their 11 personnel, but there are pros and cons of everything you do in football. Whether it's the personnel, whether it's the formation you use, whether it's the defensive call you have, it's the front you have, it's the running back that you have in the game. Like, every little thing matters and has positives and negatives. So when you're an 11 personnel with three receivers, you limit the run menu that you can get to. And what that does is it makes you predictable. And that is death in the NFL, is being predictable. Mm-hmm. That is, you want to have, you don't want to have tendencies, or if you do have a tendency, you want to make sure you set it up like, hey, it's coming, and then you break the tendency once the season goes along. So what 11 personnel started to do was, defenses are very, very smart in the NFL these days. All this data that we use right now for offense, defenses use it, and they just go, they use the same exact stuff, that these trends, tendencies. So when they said, oh, you're an 11 personnel, you're in this formation, say the Bengals or something like that. Okay, we know that zone's coming, this zone run. Okay, then we can call this play, and 80% of the time we'll be right. It's you're betting chances here, you know, probabilities. So when you get into 12 with two tight ends, it, old school wise, it used to be you had a big blocking burly wide tight end, and then the receiving tight end was kind of a hybrid guy, you know, not so much a true receiving tight end. Guys have gotten lighter at that position, more athletic. You don't see the wide tight end anymore, but there are some of those coming back. And this is kind of what has trickled up from college. Receiving tight ends are kind of coming back. That 235-pound to 245-pound guy, you might not see this reflected in fantasy all the time. Some guys, yes, like a Trey McBride or something like mm-hmm. that. But most of the times, I'm saying these guys are more the secondary roles, the auxiliary roles. But that's, it's a reflection of, you're trying to make the defense or be unpredictable to the defense now. We have two tight ends. We can do a bunch of different runs with two tight ends because now we have a 235-pound guy blocking a 230-pound linebacker instead of a 200-pound receiver, 190-pound receiver trying to block that 230-pound linebacker, that 215-pound safety. It's weight. Like, it really is. It's just, it's all about size matching size. So when you get to 12 personnel, you get to 21 personnel, you are bringing back the adjuster. And this is kind of a little, kind of football, I know football 301, but football 101 or football history is there. You know, we always talk about the X, the Z, the Y, XYZ, XYZ. That is traditional two receivers, tight end. The adjuster role is traditionally the fullback. That is why it's called the F when you write it up on a chalkboard. But as football expanded and personnel changed late in the 80s, especially with Joe Gibbs, the F became the second tight end. And that was to counter LT, do a whole bunch of stuff, make stuff more balanced. Then we got to three wide receivers, and that became the F. So what Mike football is, it's all in cycles, is that the F, the adjuster, has moved back into the backfield, has moved back into the wing position. The Rams were doing 11 personnel and using Cooper Kupp as the F, quote unquote, mm-hmm. but he was a tight end sometimes, a running back or a fullback sometimes, a slot receiver sometimes. That was that whole 11 and a half personnel. So what I think is happening is that there are more of these tight ends that are available that are actually decent players that can play snaps for you, 20 snaps a game, that also coaches have become more, they've expanded their minds on how to use them. Blocking, they don't try to ask them to block a 270-pound DN. They say, hey, let's just have you go to the second level. So as coordinators have gotten creative, as personnel has changed, as they've realized that there's benefits to not being predictable because now you're dictating things with this personnel grouping, that's all it is. As it just kind of, again, football goes in cycles, and now we're there's a ton of receivers, and because there's a ton of receivers, defenses know how to counter that better. So, okay, how do we zag while everyone else is doing that? Okay, let's get the tight end back on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a perfect breakdown, both from like why it makes sense from a schematic standpoint and then the cycle of the league, because, you know, this isn't necessarily reflected in fantasy, and that there's not a lot of bell cow backs, right? But there are a lot of good and efficient run games. And that's where it's been sort of like, okay, yeah, the Lions are one of the best run games in the NFL, but they're playing two running backs. And, you know, that will even, I feel like there's a future scenario, not to get people are already on, you know, week one tilt, not to get people, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs dynasty bros on like 2 years from now tilt. I can almost guarantee you that Dave Montgomery at some point is going to leave the Lions, and everybody's like, oh, Jahmyr Gibbs, like bell cow back time. And they'll probably draft another one in the third, yep. like a David Montgomery in the third round, and just keep that moving. Now they can afford, you know, they're signing guys now, but, you know, when they signed Montgomery, it was a lot of guys on cheap deals. They could afford to get like a pro version of that. They'll probably just look for the next version of that in the draft, because that's just the way NFL teams treat their running backs these days. And, you know, that cycle of that, I don't know if that's ever going to be broken. So while it hasn't trickled into that respect, we do have a lot of efficient and creative run games. And that has created ecosystems where guys like Kyren Williams can come out of nowhere with the LA Rams, right? Where, you know, I think Jonathan Taylor's in line for a huge year if he can dominate. You know, he might be one of those exceptions of a bell cow back, but, you know, other guys have cycled in and out of there over the years. So that's part of it. You know, I know we're going to talk about in your second part of the show here, one of the teams that has really jumped up from a run game perspective, leaning into some of these trends, and, you know, one back who might actually, I think, go down as a pretty decent fantasy value this year. But again, that's in part two. I want to focus on the tight end part of this here for a second before we talk about wide receivers, because you mentioned that this hasn't necessarily been reflected in fantasy. I would say that the fact that we have four guys this year who generally operated in tier one at the tight end position does make this a little bit different, because typically it's just been Kelce. He's that movable chess piece as the tight end. But now we do kind of have, like, Laporta is a little bit of that guy. Trey McBride is that guy. Mark Andrews, I think, was a value all draft season because he remains that guy and is still – I mean, I know he had a little bit of an off season, like he was in a car accident. He was kind of questionable for a while.
He's had a rough year.
But it sounds like he's going to be okay for week one. You know, the game will break down later. And again, I think he's a tier one tight end. There's also guys in my second tier. You know, Jake Ferguson has kind of become this guy. Kyle Pitts, again, banged up coming into week one because of course, why not? He should be that guy. David Njoku's kind of developed into a all around tight end. So there has been guys, and Dalton Kincaid, of course, with the Bills, we'll break them down later. There are more options, I think, at tight end, even if it's not as deep as we'd like. It's probably deeper in the NFL than it's deeper in fantasy. But maybe in 3 years, that looks different.
Yeah, it's the pie is getting sliced more. And so that, you know, as teams will use 11 a bunch and they'll use 12 a bunch. Okay, well, now that's third receiver / second tight end. Okay, they kind of eat into each other's shares and stuff like that. So that's another thing too, is that as teams use so many different personnels, is that the elite guys almost become more elite, because they are going to get the primary focus no matter what. And then the secondary guys kind of chop each other up a little bit. That's kind of how I'm trying to think of, like, a good example of that. But I mean, the team that I always just think of is the Cowboys, because I just think CD is just going to eat so many. Mm-hmm. And then Ferguson's going to get a bunch. But then it's like, you know, Schoonmaker is probably going to take some from Cooks, if Schoonmaker ever sees the field, if he's ever healthy. But it's like, but if he takes a little bit from maybe Cooks and maybe whoever is the third receiver that they're trying to trot out this week, you know, like, that is, like, that's where the kind of secondary kind of options go away. But I think it's, as those get divvied up, it makes the number one guy, if you have one, not, and I'm not just saying that your number one target, I'm saying the top six receivers in the league or Travis Kelce, that becomes even more important as they take the primary focus. I'll also say, you mentioned Laporta and Kincaid too. When I was talking about kind of the creativity of how coaches are using them, those two tight ends are what come to mind as far as what Joe Brady and Ben Johnson did with them. And I don't want to kind of take away too much, but from what I'm going to say later, but with Ben Johnson, how he used Laporta and Amon-Ra St. Brown and the, what I call inverted looks, where Amon-Ra St. Brown is in the tight end spot, Laporta is split out as a receiver, you know, because St. Brown can block and he's pretty good, you know, playing in line and doing all the power slot stuff. And Laporta is athletic enough to win one-on-one on the outside. Because he could beat safeties and beat DBs one-on-one, that made that all valid. But that used to be back in the day, like, all right, it was just how Travis Kelce is used. ISO receiver, you're kind of an X receiver. Now they're doing these two-man combinations. He's not getting asked to block and do all the stuff that I thought would limit him a little bit early in his career. They're being just understanding of what they're really good at and what they're, okay, we're going to hide what they're bad at. I know this is coaching 101, but it's nice to see actual freaking coaches doing it and actually doing all the offseason speak. They actually did it in practice. So it's they've expanded their minds and how they use guys, and it's expanded my mind and how I evaluate tight ends and other positions too, because now I think there's more roles and more room and more paths for these guys to be valid players and valuable players, just real life and fantasy.
Well, that's the reason that I know a lot of us on the outside, and it seemed like it was rumored to be potentially true that, like, all the Rams would love to get Brock Bowers, right? Because they could do some of that stuff with both Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua.
It's the dream.
it was the dream, like as the power slot player, and then do some of that, you know, Laporta to Brock Bowers thing, as you mentioned there in your example. So I love that. Again, I think it's going to open up more for these top tight ends at some point to potentially be more of a stable position. My pitch with the tight end position in fantasy has always been pretty clear, because there was at least some talk the last 2 years about maybe we should merge tight end and wide receiver, because it's too hard. There are not enough good tight ends. One, that's a quitter's mentality. Two, look, we are not soft on this fantasy podcast. Okay, no. We are not soft. Number get two, yeah, try harder. Okay, you want harder. Life to be easier. Pay up for one of the top guys. That's you want your life to be simpler. You pay up for those luxuries. Anyways, not to go down that path again. But it's all about just restoring the middle class here, and I think this movement is part of that. That's a reason that one of the teams that leans into these heavy personnel packages, the Arizona Cardinals, is why Trey McBride is really good, and they still drafted another tight end in the third round. So I think there will be more splashy impact from these ancillary players, also from fullbacks too. Like, fullbacks don't matter in fantasy, but you know, you do see teams like Miami and obviously San Francisco make use of the fullback. I found it interesting that Jonnu Smith is listed as a fullback on the Dolphins early depth chart.
Is he actually?
Yeah. And I don't know if that means anything, because I actually do think Jonnu was like a very interesting deep sleeper at tight end in this offense. I just wonder if how they're gonna align everything there. So it's going to make for some interesting ancillary pieces. That's how the tight end position is going to be impacted. But I want to, before talking about some specific teams here to watch out for with this, I wanted to hit on one point that you brought up there about target concentration for the wide receivers here, because wide receivers are a money position in fantasy. It's super important. And this trend, while it takes one wide receiver off the field, data shows that the fewer wide receivers are on the field, the more both efficient and highly targeted your top receivers can be. And Miami's an outlier example, but they're the perfect example of two guys who dominate the target share and are, you know, Waddle's coming off an injury plagued season. But think 2 years ago when both those guys like pushed for 60% something of the target share and were outrageously efficient. That's what matters here, is that it's going to take some wide receivers off the field. It's going to make your third and your fourth wide receiver on the depth chart probably not fantasy viable, but it's going to increase the productivity of your top receivers, which is why I have found myself, Nate, when building teams this offseason, so inclined to be like the hero RB build, where I want like two or three receivers in the first three rounds, because man, like those guys at the top of the position are going to be they're going to be bigger difference makers than ever.
They are. I know it's almost becoming the receivers don't matter argument, in the sense that there's so many good ones that the baseline's higher. But then if you have those true dudes, like I said, like you're just saying, it's like the concentrated targets. Oh my God, that's just, they're on a whole another tier of themselves. This is also in like kind of football makeup and certain teams. It's like there's public discourse about certain positions on certain teams. I'm like, oh my God, we can barely even get a national conversation about the Titans, and everybody knows who the Eagles third receiver is. Yeah. And everybody knows who the Bears second or third defensive end is, like, because they just, oh my God, we need this guy. The Eagles, like, they signed Julio last year for a spot. They had Zacchaeus in there, and they just traded for Dotson. I always just thought that was such a weird team building exercise for me, because you have Devontae Smith, you have AJ Brown, you have Dallas Goedert. Now you have Saquon too, who can catch passes. You don't need a dude at slot. You need a dirty work auxiliary guy. Mm-hmm. That's why Zacchaeus actually kind of fit for me in that role. But that was, that's from a team builder perspective, because that's when you already have guys. You don't need every guy to be a bucket getter.
Yeah, right.
Like, you need a guy that sets freaking screens. You need a guy that's going to play D. Like, that is, I think just from a team builder perspective that we see from this, that again, it doesn't get always reflected in fantasy. But if the team building goes right, where they get the auxiliary guys that make sense, it opens up more for the star guys to be stars. So sometimes I get frustrated with some team building with some guys they add. I'm like, the Bills did this for a little bit. Spoilers, but I'm going to talk about the flip side. I think they've learned their lessons. But I think some teams, there was a disconnect of what they thought they needed and what they actually needed. And it's nice sometimes, it's refreshing sometimes when you see teams actually understand what they do need. Like, Alec Ingold's not going to get 40 targets, but Alec Ingold is a very valuable member of the Dolphins offense. Actually, I'll say one of the most important ones. Yeah. I know, obviously, also had Tyreek and all that stuff. And
he's useful also, when he does get targeted.
He's smart, he's athletic. Yeah. Oh, Jonnu Smith, by the way, great shout out, because they're already giving him freaking reverses in the preseason.
Crazy.
He can't wait to use them. He's not going to get a high usage rate, but he's going to be like a sniper usage. Yeah. It's like one or two touches for a touchdown and 30 yards. It's like, that's what I feel like his stats are going to be.
Low usage, high yield usage is what we're looking for from a player like that. I would say the receiver example of this, and obviously this team took a first round receiver this year, but the 49ers also paid Juwan Jennings. He's a great example of this that is never going to, you know, he's certainly not a bucket getter or anything like that. You know, the targets are going to go to Debo and to Ayuk and to CMC and to Kittle, but you need a third down sometimes. Like, Juwan Jennings is reliable. He's where he's supposed to be. So he's obviously, I think, kind of the peak receiver example for that. And you're never, let me tell you what, if you have to start Juwan Jennings on your fantasy team is effed. All right. But he's important to the 49ers, and he allows those other guys to be who they are.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. He's a 3-and-D guy in basketball. He stands in the corner. He might only shoot three shots a game, but he's going to make two of them. Yeah. And he's going to play some great D. Glad you roped in Juwan Jennings. I feel like I haven't brought up Juwan Jennings in a while, and I feel like he should be brought up every single week. Probably the best dirty work guy in the league. I love Juwan Jennings. But that's a great, great example. It's just that not every third receiver is the same. Not every second tight end's the same. Yeah. Like, technically, the second tight end for the Cardinals, Tip Ryman or Elijah Higgins, they are the blocker. And so they come in to be the blocker, and Trey McBride gets to do all the fun stuff. Typically, base down number one tight end is the blocker. So again, it's the roles are different from team to team, which is, you know, Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, totally different pairing of two tight ends. Like, where I actually think they're both valid receivers. If like, say, Andrews went down, I would still think Likely could be okay in a pinch.
It's
just that, you know, again, these team makeups are just wildly different.
Let's quickly just hit on a few teams maybe we haven't mentioned that makes sense to pay attention to before we transition to your team in the second half, because that's actually a good team to talk about this as well, but we'll save them. If you can't figure it out yet, it is the Buffalo Bills, since we've had it several times. But we talk, you know, we don't need to talk about like the Dolphins and the 49ers and really even the Ravens, but what are some other teams that maybe will make use of this heavier personnel and how this might impact some of the outside receivers there?
We've talked plenty about the Cardinals. The Rams actually might start experimenting with some more two tight end looks. They had Colby Parkinson, or they signed him. They have Allen, who they're really high on, and we'll see when Higbee comes back. But I know they were, you know, that Bowers thing was very real. You already talked about it, but I think they've had the ideas about it, implementing it more. The Chiefs, I think, are going to crank it up. That's why they went for Wiley. That's why they're bringing guys in. Mm-hmm. The Packers are on the forefront of a lot of stuff. Shoot, I don't want to spoil it already, but the Steelers are going to be, because Arthur Smith are going to be, I think they might base out of three tight ends because they're trotting two out there every play, and they have some size with Freiermuth and Washington and everybody. So that run game wise, that's why I'm excited about them, is because they have the size and the bully ballness and the Arthur Smithness of that offense. So that's why.
I want to hit on two of those teams, expand a little bit. One, you mentioned the Steelers. Like, I've been sort of, I'm in line with ADP on George Pickens. I actually drafted him in my final draft last night as my, I think, fourth receiver, because, again, I went with a heavy receiver build. He's the guy that I think will probably be volatile. That's just, one, the nature of playing a run-heavy offense, and two, I think it's the nature of his game, and I think it will probably always be that way. But he is in line to have a monstrous target share. How that might end up being 120 targets at like a 28% clip because of how they're going to play. But he should, not only will he probably be in two receiver sets, he's probably going to be in, like you mentioned, 13 personnel, like just one wide receiver on the field. And as much as I like Freiermuth and the whole Darnell Washington thing is interesting, your top target getter is going to be George Pickens on a variety of those plays. So he's interesting there. And then with the Packers guys, I feel like, you know, it's
everybody. We're going to talk about
that game, because we're going to preview the Eagles Packers game a little bit briefly. But man, I just two of these guys are going to be like complete, not zeros in fantasy, but they're going to be impossible to play just because they are going to play these two tight ends. And I think they're going to, I don't even know if like Musgrave or Kraft will emerge as fantasy starters, but they're going to be these potentially low usage, high yield plays, like the routes that they can get them on. To me, like, and even a guy like Jaden Reed, who I know you and I both really like, I have him at wide receiver 34 heading into the season. In almost any other situation, a guy that did what he did last year, has the reception perception profile that he does, and plays on a good offense with a good quarterback, I'd probably have that guy going into his second season ranked in the mid to, you know, maybe even high 20s, because he's just that good of a player. But and if he's the one that loses out here, I think the Packers are making a big, big mistake. Like, to me, he would be almost... he'd be my flanker on almost all the snaps that were in two, and then he'd move into the slot and 11 personnel. That's fine, but that's just one of the best big reveals, because I think they're a team to really monitor with this trend.
I know, it's kind of receiver by committee. It's going to be a nightmare trying to sort that out. I think you even said that they might have a different guy leading every category: receptions, yeah, receiving totally. Yards, and touchdowns. And I totally can picture that as well. Kraft had the pec this week. I think he's still banged up. But I've been trying to picture in my mind, because I understand what LaFleur is trying to say, where he said, we don't have a receiver one. Like, it's better to have all these guys that you have to game plan for. And I do think that part of the meta of where defenses are right now, that makes a lot of sense. I actually don't think it was just coach speak. They're saying, like, hey, if you're going to run a lot of zone defenses, we need a lot of guys that can get open, because we don't know which part of the zone is going to be open. So I actually understood that, and I love that in a real football sense. But like, it's, let me draft one of these guys, because I want a piece of this offense. Like, and I'm terrified. Okay, maybe Jacobs has to be it, or Love has to be it. But it's just like, I've in a personal sense, I've stayed away from all these guys, because it's just like, I can't predict it, and that's making me antsy. In a real football sense, can't freaking wait to watch it. But again, that's a huge disconnect. No, I'm glad you brought those guys, brought them up. Brought up the Pickens thing too. Like, I was just picturing that in my head too. Is that it's like, yeah, who is going to get all the other targets? Like, you're bringing it up, and I was just kind of like, in my head, I'm like, yeah, Freiermuth will get some. I'm like, Washington's going to get like one a game.
Yeah,
you know, I bet you the running backs get a ton, because Russell Wilson checks it down a bunch.
Van Jefferson, it's great.
Isn't Scotty Miller on that team too?
He is.
Artie. I'm trying to think of the other team. The Titans will be interesting. I like their two tight end looks. I'm a big fan of Josh Wiley and Chig. They're fun. They're athletic guys. They can do some other stuff. And so I think with Bill Callahan, he likes to, even though he's the O-line coach, not the play caller, but, you know, he's got the ear of his son, that coach. I think that they're going to get some more bully ball looks, because I just think that's going to be the identity of their offense. And I wish they had different backs back there. I like Spears, but he's just smaller for how hard of a runner he is. It reminds me of Devontae Freeman a little bit, where it's like, you're undersized, but you're so tough, and I love it, but don't like your long-term prognosis. And then Pollard's, you know, is allergic to running between the tackles. So I just don't like that. Even if I like the makeup of where that run game is going, I think they need one more little piece next year's draft. But that's another team I'm looking at with kind of tight end usage. Oh, shit. The Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers. Like, so if any other team with a cool quarterback and maybe some, no offense to Luke Getsy, he's fine, but it's just fine. You know, somebody else, some innovative guy that was like, you know, Sean McVay, you know, I'd be really stoked about two tight end prospects I've been highest on in the past 8 years, 10 years since I've been doing this, and they're on the same team and they're both really good. That should get us more excited. It's just that kind of gets lost in on the strip here in Las Vegas.
All right, well, let's throw to a break and come back and talk about a team that is making more use of 12 personnel and is certainly higher on the interest scale from a quarterback perspective than the Gardner Minshew Aiden O'Connell battle. Let's take a break and do it right after this. All right, we're back. Nate, this is the thing you are nerding out about heading into week one on the offensive side of the football. It's Buffalo Bills running game, if we haven't teased it enough so far. So tell the people why they should be excited about the Bills running game.
Even if the whole Ken Dorsey, Joe Brady swappage at coordinator and play caller, and there's so many things you could say about differences in there, one thing I liked where this Bills offense went with both of these guys calling plays and now continuing this year is the evolution of their run game. And I think before, that run game was really focused on, oh, well, yeah, Josh Allen's legs. Well, of course. But now they've really have figured out something that works for them. They are more of a bully ball team than you would think. They're kind of a spread bully team. And they will pound duo, which is a very, power at you run. Duo is power without the puller, so it's power. But they will go right down your throat. They have figured out looks to do this. They will get into jumbo personnel as much as anybody, jumbo being a six tight end or a six offensive lineman as tight end. They are one of the teams that use it more than anybody. They are innovative with some of the runs they're using because Brady, I think, is willing to look at some college stuff. And maybe the offensive line coach too, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but they're willing to adjust maybe some of the more fatty college plays that other NFL people maybe, turn their nose up at. But I think it's good. And I think others are going to start looking at these plays. They run a dart run concept, which is a tackle pull. Deion Dawkins is a very good puller. Spencer Brown, the right tackle, is a very good puller. Spencer Brown's not a guy where I just talk about tight ends. You don't want down blocking a big, big defensive end. All right, let's get him on the move. Let's use his athleticism and do that. That's knowing your personnel. So they will use that concept more than anybody, and it's a weapon for them. This team on early down runs last year was fifth in EPA per run. So this is a legit, legit run team. And I just looked it up. So outside 2 minutes last year on early downs, which is first and second down, this team had the sixth most running back runs. So not even including Josh Allen. So just straight running back runs, early downs, outside 2 minutes. The teams ahead of them are teams that we just talked about, my friend Matt. Dolphins, Lions, 49ers, Steelers, Falcons. Teams that we associate as more Shanahan or bully ball and fullbacks and tight ends. Not spread it and rip it, Josh Allen, run around, mm-hmm. craziness. Like this, I still think there's a disconnect with the Bills right now. And I don't know if anyone's listened to me the last 2 months. It's just pounding away that it's like, this is a different team than people are envisioning. This team on those runs, third best success rate in the entire league on running back runs with James Cook and Ty Johnson. These guys that James Cook is fun. He's explosive and everything, but he's not, I would not say an upper tier guy, upper tier back. They're only behind the Dolphins and the Rams for the best run game last year as far as success rate, but their boom rate was 20th. So this is just a hyper efficient run game that's doing some innovative stuff as far as adjustments to the runs. And this is without throwing in what I consider the most dangerous runner in the league in Josh Allen, which is kind of the ace in the hole that they can play at any time. They don't need to create explosives with their offense because that's why you have the Dragon. You have Josh Allen. He's the explosive play machine. You do this run game, this nickel and dime pass game that I think they're going to lean into, that is to lift the bar, lift up the floor of this offense. Josh puts us over the top. And I like that formula a lot. And this is the last thing about just personnel makeup with this. And this is, you're gonna laugh because this is just total caricature of myself. Receivers as blockers in this freaking offense. Yeah, they have Mac Hollins playing snaps in this offense. He's there to block, guys. I've watched more Mac Hollins than anybody watching the Falcons last year and the Raiders before that. He is there to, he's a tight end. That's basically, he's a receiver playing tight end. Remember I talked about inverse looks with maybe a receiver and a tight end, Mac Hollins and Dalton Kincaid. It's kind of like Sam LaPorta and Amon-Ra St. Brown. A Diet Coke version.
Just a little bit.
A 5 cent dollar store version.
I was going to say the bottom shelf Kroger diet soda of the,
The unmarked vodka bottle at the bottom of the shelf. Oh. Not even Burnett's. Not even Kharkov or Pop-Pop. None of that. So, but that, it's making sense in my head. Even Keon Coleman. I'm telling you, Matt, and I've brought it up, I think, every time we talk about Keon Coleman, when you brought him up as a power slot, I'm actually more mad at myself for not envisioning that. Because now it's really clicked for me. And again, I have not seen this in there's not a proof of concept yet. But the idea of it's really making sense in my brain. Put him in a slot and let him block people. Let him be a big zone beater in the middle there. Him and Kincaid can do some stuff. They can kind of do it on either side. That's the formations this team runs more than anybody. So even to have MVS, who's a good blocker. Khalil Shakir does everything well. Good blocking too. And so... yeah, this kind of spread bully Bills run game has me kind of really juiced up. I could talk about other run game adjustments they've made, but it's a little better with film. So I'll save that until the season starts. But it's this Bills run game's really kind of got me juiced up. And I think that it's kind of gotten dropped by the wayside as maybe some more shiny new toys are kind of popping up around the league.
A lot of fantasy threads to pull there. And I want to just hit the receivers before we talk about James Cook, where when you talked about the Lions at the beginning with those flip-flopping roles between Sam LaPorta and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Yeah, that, the first thing I thought about was Dalton Kincaid and Keon Coleman. You bring up Matt Collins. Like, I think Matt Collins is, I've been joking about the sacrificial X all offseason. He's the one guy I think actually will do. Like, he will do it. He's, I guarantee you, exactly, we are going to talk about this in week one. People will be upset by how much Matt Collins plays in week one. Like, I drafted Curtis Samuel, I drafted Khalil Shakir, I drafted Keon Coleman at Dynasty. What the hell is Matt Collins doing out there? It has been a thing basically since the first snap of training camp for the Buffalo Bills that Matt Collins is the guy who's beaten out like MVS and Chase Claypool and these guys, I think, to be that sacrificial X for this team. But he is going to do the dirty work. He is going to block. He's going to be a part of all those things too. So I think, again, he's just going to play more than people think. So if you are listening to this podcast, you will be the only fantasy listener that is prepared for Matt Collins to play more in week one than he probably
would. We're not saying to draft him. Just saying prep yourself.
Do not draft him. Just be prepared. When your favorite fantasy analyst tweets out the route participation data from week one, and Matt Collins is at, you know, I don't know, 50%.
Keon Coleman only ran 12 routes, and Matt Collins ran 32.
These idiots. What are they doing? Yeah. Maybe Keon Coleman takes a minute for them to figure out what he can do him, because that's not really what he did at Florida State. I think it's his best usage at the pro level is him being this power slot and using that. But that's why he might be more of a second half of the season type of player. Agreed. And like, investing in rookie receivers in the second half has been a proven strategy for success in fantasy football. That's why Keon Coleman might be that guy. Very similar to like an Amon-Ra St. Brown, who took a minute. Like, I remember talking about this in his in the in-season reception perception That's rookie report, his rookie year, that in all of his pre-draft stuff, I said, this is a power slot. This is a power slot. He should play inside as a big slot receiver. He should be Bud Light Cooper Kupp. That's who Amon-Ra St. Brown is. And then in the in-season rookie report that year, that's usually like the first 8 to 10 weeks of the season, I'm like, they're playing him mostly outside, and he's running like post and go routes. Like, he will never be successful in that role. And then the back half of the season, he's playing all slots, and he's run short routes and in breakers and all that stuff. And that's who he's been ever since. Like, so if Keon Coleman takes a minute for them to figure out what he can do, like, don't panic about that in the early part of the season. So I really like this comparison between Lions and Bills from a receiver perspective. But I do want to just throw this back to James Cook as well, because I ended up ranking him, you know, like as a kind of a fringe running back one. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, he's my 14th running back, 13th, 14th. I like alternated between him and Rashad White. But the reason I think that he could end up being a pretty big value from this group of players here, like that typical start of the running back dead zone, is that one, this rushing efficiency from the Buffalo Bills, as you mentioned. I mean, they were number one, according to Fantasy Points data, in success rate on man gap runs. He's not the perfect running back. Yeah, duo. He's not the perfect running back, but he's a big play guy, and also he's a big play potential threat in the pass game. Last year, the top four players in targets per route run on the Bills: Stephon Diggs, then Ty Johnson, only like 7 targets, but small sample size, another running back, Dalton Kincaid, and then fourth was James Cook. Like, James Cook was up there, and they had him at an air yards per target number of over 2.0, which is crazy high for a running back. And him and Saquon Barkley are the only two guys in the last 2 years to have air yards per target north of 2.0 at the running back position.
That actually ties to the duo run too, is because when they're under center passing, they never straight drop back. It's always play action, and they're tying it with the main run, which is that duo, that run, that man gap run. Those are juicy for the passing game, especially when you have a guy like Josh Allen that can throw out 100 yards, because of the threat of Allen throwing far, there's so much space. So checkdowns become 15-yard gains in this offense, and it reminds me a lot of the Rams in 2018. Yeah. And I reference this all the time, the Gurley checkdowns.
Yes.
Because Gurley caught so many that were just 20-yarders, because there's so much space in this play action offense, because they lean into that. That's where Cook is really good at those. I don't know if I have your feelings on Ray Davis, but that type of back made sense for them, as far as just having a guy that keeps them on schedule.
Grinder back.
I think a grinder back. They've been trying to get it. We've talked about this because we were talking about they tried to do with Latavius Murray. They tried to Damian get these Harris, guys in here.
Yeah.
Damian Harris, you know, formerly of Yahoo. They finally get Ray Davis in there. But then the other thing was Ty Johnson became, I'm glad you mentioned him, because they started using him as like a de facto fullback. Like they started going like pony personnel, which is two running backs, two true tailbacks on the field at the same time. And they were kind of, again, they're doing some fun stuff with that at the end of the year. So again, I like Cook. I don't love him. Like I didn't love him as a prospect. I like having him as a player on my team. I don't like him as my main back because he's more of a speed guy. He'll bounce stuff a little bit more than I like. They're built for, if they had a, trying to think like it, I was not going to say Devin Singletary. They had a fast Devin Singletary. This would be great for him. But if they had someone that was a guy that stayed on schedule all the time, a Kyren Williams, a Blake Corum, those guys, like just a boom, 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 steady guy. Oh my God, this offense I'd feel even more about. But I get the trade off to kind of create maybe explosive plays where as you're trying to be efficient with it.
Yeah, they're getting part of the Gurley experience, but they're not getting the whole Gurley experience because James Cook, I'm with you. I like him, but he's not Todd Gurley. So maybe Ray Davis, again, deep sleeper type, waiver wire speed dial player. He could maybe be that running back that keeps them on schedule. Week one, they play your Arizona Cardinals, do the Buffalo Bills at home. They're your Arizona Cardinals.
I think the betting line got moved down too. Like people are betting on the Cardinals. So I think it's been lowered.
They're all
too.
Football 301 listeners.
Gotta stop listening.
Start listening to that stuff in week two and beyond. Week one in Buffalo.
I already started slowing down when you said over under 7.5. I went under. I'm not letting this happen to me again.
No,
it doesn't matter though.
It's too late. It's already a runaway train.
The die has been cast.
The Bills right now, in terms of implied points, they're the highest on the week with the Lions at 27.3 implied points. So this is all to say we broke this Bills offense down, and like James Cook could come out of week one as a big time winner because they're playing in running friendly game scripts and all this stuff. So definitely keep an eye on that.
Blitz happy defense, best way to go against that, pound the rock. So
have like a check down option for a big play in the pass game with James Cook. So he's definitely somebody I will have my eye on in week one. Nate, the one thing that you want people to like, the one thing that Nate Tice wants people to like is actually another, quote, dead zone back who, I'm going to tell you what, before I'm going to let you go on this thing, but I'm praying to God you are right on this one because I drafted a suspicious amount of this player this year because he would fall and fall and fall in drafts. And so I'm hoping that you're right about this thing you want people to like.
Oh, yeah. I got plenty of takes on this team that has currently the lowest win total. Projected win total right now. That's the Amazing. Patriots at 4.5 wins. And maybe, again, I didn't even think I would be like the high guy in the Patriots in the national media scene, even with my Drake May stock. But I'm just watching this. I'm like, this isn't as bad as everyone making this out to be. First off, the defense is going to be top 10, even without Barmore and Judon. Have we looked at this defense? But looking at the offense, the O-line, and I know much has been made about the O-line. There are a ton of people studying Patriots offensive line tape this August. A ton of people. So I know we have to listen to them.
All the sincerity and sarcasm in that. Yeah. No sarcasm, all sincerity in that.
The irony of, I laugh at everything I say, and then as soon as I get sarcastic, I don't laugh, if you ever want to tell. that being sarcastic. But this run game, and I brought up the offensive line coach. I know more about the Patriots offensive line coach than anybody, Mr. Peters here, but is that it's a sound offense. Mm-hmm. It is not gimmicky. It's not exciting. It's not going to blow your socks off, but I trust this offensive staff that the baseline of the scheme, the concepts are going to be an acceptable NFL level. I know that's not exciting. It's not crazy. I know that's not the sexiest thing you ever want to hear about an offense. But why I'm saying that is, why are we predicting this to be like the historically bad offensive line, historically bad offense? Because I think the cast of characters are more competent than people realize. I think this offensive line is more competent than people realize. Andrews was not playing the center in the preseason. He's back. So those snap things are going to be cleaned up a little bit. I also think getting them all on track, I think the snap stuff will get better. I think the guards play will be better. They found a fourth rounder And Leighton Robinson, I always forget his first name, but it's Leighton Robinson. Come on, guess it right. Yeah, Leighton Robinson, fourth rounder. But my brain, man. Don't remember what I had for breakfast. But I just think it's not great. I'm not saying this is going to be a top 10 offense line. I'm just saying it's not going to be this historically bad thing that everyone's made him out to be. I think it's more like the 22nd best offensive line. Pass protection wise, eh. They'll give him chip hop, whatever. But as far as run game, this guy is a Bill Callahan disciple of the offensive line coach. They're going to pound the rock. They have beef up front. They have at least decent. They have, I would say, I'm going to go with three decent starters. Three decent starters and two question marks. But they also have tight ends that are willing to block. They have a bunch of dirty work receivers. That mm-hmm. adds up. If you want a good run game, you need receivers that block. And I know that sounds like, we don't want to say it all the time, but it does matter if you want the run game. Stevenson's a true three down back. He pass protects. He catches the ball. They're going to have him on the field for three downs. I think, you know, are you worried about Antonio Gibson taking too many touches? I think it's more like a 70-30 kind of split. That's how I picture it. Gibson's going to have his spells. He actually looked decent a little bit, actually, in some things. But I'm just making up that this offensive ecosystem is not historically bad. I could look at a few teams right now that I think have worse lines, worse potential run games because of their lines and just who they have back there, the personnel that they have, and the coaching that they have. But I just want to say that, like the Patriots offense and like where this run game can go and like Stevenson's stock a lot, because I just his size, his skill set, their commitment to him salary wise, and just who else are we going to give touches to? Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be a 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Holy crap. This is a Jeff Fisher 2016 Rams offense with Gurley. This, I think, is just the baseline. It's going to be more competent than people realize, because I think the offensive line is below average, but not god awful. Like, I think just the narrative has been this last month.
Like I said, I'm hoping you're right on this, buddy, because I was.
But they are going against the Bengals week one, and the Bengals cannot stop a nosebleed on the ground right now. It's so they might look okay week one.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I was pretty much just in line with consensus ADP at the running back position this year. Didn't really have any outliers in the top 25 backs. The two guys that stood out for me was, one, Jalen Warren, just because I think he got faded a little bit because of the offseason injury. I'm generally in on Jalen Warren this year. And two was Rhamondre Stevenson, who I had six spots ranked ahead of consensus. And again, ended up with him in a suspicious amount of drafts this year because I believe in a lot of what you're selling here.
I have him at two right now. And I'm
So we'll see. I do like this one. I want to put a pin in it and come back to it in week four, and we'll check in on the Patriots, because I'm sure we'll want you to talk Drake May. And like, is it time for Drake May? I bet you he'll be playing by week four anyway. So that's my prediction. And then I do want to check in on Stevenson, because I think that's really interesting. So let's throw to the break. And when we come back, we'll preview the Thursday night and Friday night games real quick, and then we'll get out of here. All right, we're back. Nate Tice, we have two games to talk through, because we're not going to include our Friday preview on the Friday show so that it's not dated when people listen to it. So we're going to talk through both these games here. Yes, that was definitely my smart idea, not our genius producers, Brett Rader and Colin Brennan. No, it was my idea, because I'm the brains of this operation.
So someone's like, man, my friend goes, man, I really like that intro thing that you do. That was a great idea. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know we were doing it. That was the producer. Yeah. So shout out to everyone that makes us look good.
Basically
Stone.
Stone at Football 301, Adi as well. Yeah, basically, if anything is good on the podcast, it's probably the production team. If it's something shitty, it's my fault. It's probably was my idea. So
I like that.
Yeah. I'm no Donovan McNabb, baby. I got to lift up my teammates here. Okay, so let's talk. The Eagles are our second team, but let's talk Ravens, Chiefs, season opener on Thursday night football. Nate Tice, just give me your big picture thoughts about this matchup before we talk a couple props.
I'm staring at the Chiefs' new faces. That's the left tackle. Hollywood Brown is hurt, not playing. They just announced it, I think. And then, Xavier Worthy, Wiley, the tight end, really the offensive line in general and the run game, because I think that's going to dictate so much for this Chiefs team. Oh, it's just the feelings and vibes more than the big playness that we're all excited about. I think it's more just that steady down-to-down run game. Sua Mataia, the left tackle, is huge for that. And Trey Smith kind of getting back, who looked good this preseason, but getting back to where his caliber play was, because he took a drop-off last year. So that's why I'm watching for the Chiefs. Ravens-wise, they got a lot of new coaches on defense. They got new reconfigured faces on their offensive line as well. Not the sexiest things. Then I'm also really excited to look at Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, and that run game. Yeah, I just, as a football nerd, that is something I can get ready for. I don't think I'm crazy and hipster in saying that I'm excited to watch those two in action. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch tomorrow night.
Yeah, focusing on when the Chiefs have the ball, I think you hit the two big things that we're looking for here, especially from a fantasy perspective, is, yeah, the run game in general. You know, they're breaking in a new rookie left tackle. We'll see how that goes. The tackle play was a big talking point in week one last year with the Kansas City Chiefs, if you don't remember.
Oh, my God, I remember that.
And
Jawan Taylor
jumping snaps. Again, another very serious thing that we should always pay attention to. And they're a perfect team to talk about, too, with, like, receivers blocking, because Rashee Rice is a big player, and I actually kind of thought blocking's okay. Like, it was okay as a rookie. It was fine. I'll give him credit for
being...
They
asked him to run a lot of bubbles for a reason.
Yeah. I'll give him credit for, at times, being willing. But
yeah,
he was willing. Also, you know, look, yeah, new position for him. He played mostly as an outside X in college. Like, he's down there in the mix and the muck from a run game perspective. So maybe in year two, that's something nobody cares about that for fantasy, but something to watch. And then Xavier Worthy, if you don't know, is 165 pounds. So is he going to be in there fitting the run? That will be certainly something to monitor.
Travis Kelce doesn't block either. So
right. So they're going to be asking a lot of, like, the dirty work, bros. Maybe that's why Juju's back. He's back. He's back to block, baby.
Seriously, though, like, last year I kept saying, I was like, I'm not saying this guy's going to get 1,000 yards. They need a Juju Smith-Schuster just to catch a 5-yard pass and just to, like, you know, set a pick and just for somebody else. And then they signed him. I'm like, all right, well, it's been, all right. And then they signed literally Juju Smith-Schuster. Yeah. All right, cool. Fine. That's good.
Because Rashee Rice is kind of the receiver parts of Juju Smith-Schuster, early career Juju Smith-Schuster, and a little bit Jarvis Landry-ish as well from a reception perception standpoint. But he's not the, like,
what was, like, his reception profile look like? Jarvis Landry, was that? Oh, that must have been a funky one.
It was a weird one, man. I think actually when I look at the, I think I've made this point before, but, like, historic route percentages in terms of, like, slants, number one is Rashee Rice's rookie year at 38.3% slant route rate. Number two is actually one of Juju's years, 2021. Not too far down there at 34.1% is Jarvis Landry's rookie year. So, and he also ran about the same amount of screen routes as Rashee Rice. So route percent, way more flat routes too. Those are also high in the other route category, which is some of that, like, reversal stuff, whatever. So pretty similar.
Look at Rice. RP Rice has a little more juice than those two, though. Like, that's,
he has more,
that's
he,
why
he has
that's
more
why
juice.
Feels a little different.
He absolutely, certainly more than Landry. I think Juju had some after catch pop when he was younger, but he
had that 5-yard burst that he was really good at. That drop step and you get up. Yep.
He doesn't, but Rice does not have the same kind of, like, hammerhead in the run game or, like, setting a pick, any of that stuff that those two guys did. So that's something to watch, especially how that affects Isaiah Pacheco, who's weirdly become, like, a polarizing player in the last week for fantasy because they signed Samaje Perine. And Samaje Perine's role in week one, I guess, will bear watching.
Perine's a pass protection back. That's always there to do. It's there to be on third down to block for Mahomes and catch some checkdowns. That is Perine's role in the NFL.
But to the people's point, that will, if he owns that role and truly owns it, it will shave off some of the hoped ceiling for Isaiah Pacheco and make him, you know, maybe a back end running back one, but not a guy that is going to threaten the top eight at the position.
Be worried about Carson Steele.
I've heard that name as well. See, this, Nate, I hope none of our bosses are listening to this because they certainly don't listen to our content. For sure. There's another.
They just see the runtime.
They're too focused on that 2-hour 16-bit you did with Charles McDonald a couple weeks ago. But Like, I hope no our boss are not listening to this, because this is the one place where I'll just never be that great of a fantasy analyst, is I can't possibly get myself week one of the NFL season. Week one of the freaking NFL season after months and months and months of no football. Like, I will not lead the show with burning question. How much will Samaje Perine play and how will that affect Isaiah Pacheco? I don't care, man. I mean, I know I should care. I know the people care, but I'm not going to put top five things to watch in the season opener. How much will Samaje Perine play and how will that limit Isaiah Pacheco's season long ceiling? I know I should care, but I don't care. I said it. I said it on the show so that the listeners on the show are aware that this is something to watch. So that's what we're looking at when the Chiefs have the ball. When the Ravens have the ball, I'm with you. It's just Derrick Henry's role, and I do think a little bit, you know, how much does Justice Hill play? Because they talked him up a little bit too, if we want to continue the theme of sickos and what they care about at the running backs. And then just
backup running back discussions.
This is a fantasy football podcast, Nate, that we talk about backup running backs here. I'm also, of course, interested in Zay Flowers and what his role is in year two and the Bateman playing time. Is he truly an every down receiver for them? So those two things, I think, are the number one thing. I'm beyond Derrick Henry, and that's freaking cool. Those two receivers and what their roles are something I'm dialing into as well.
You know that there's a gif of the dog with the cake and he has like the crazy eyes, you know, it's just like staring off the distance. And someone did like a PTSD, like supercut over it, where it's just like all these like bad images. You said Rashad Bateman and it just clicked in my brain that this is an island game. He better not have a drop.
I know.
Please, Rashad Bateman, just be okay tomorrow, because I just survived.
Just okay.
Riley Leonard, Connor Weigman mentions from my freaking preseason big board. I had to survive that for a weekend. I can't stand another island game Twitter mention blow up. I hadn't thought about that until literally you said Rashad Bateman right now, and I just realized that's an island game where everybody's watching.
I had somebody in my Discord point out that for two years ago the Rams were the week one opener, and I was really in on Allen Robinson and the Rams, and that went to
then that week last game was a brutal one too.
That was brutal. I'll still never get over, like, I don't think I like watching season openers, because that one scarred me forever. And then last year, Sky Moore was a guy I wasn't super like, I'm going to rank him really aggressively last year, but he was a prospect I liked. And I was like, I can't wait to see what Sky Moore does in week one, with an open receiver room, zero catches. So somebody pointed out like, oh, now we got Bateman in the week one opener. Like, I don't know if I'm fit for this, but we'll see. We'll see, man.
We'll see.
I have better hopes for, you know, ADP adjusted better hopes for Rashad Bateman than either of those two guys going into this year. But like I said, famous last words. So on that note, Nate, before we move off this game, any props we want to share for the people as we look through this?
I actually, a guy we were just talking about, I have Rashee Rice over 5.5 receptions. I think they're going to pepper him underneath. Although, you know, this defense, if they continue what they did before, we'll see kind of a mix of every type of coverage. When you get that, sometimes the quarterback will default. We want to see the big, sexy, big plays. All that space that can hypothetically get created by Xavier Worthy, plenty of room underneath for somebody to catch a lot of balls. If they're worried about the deep speed, they're trying to run all these stuff, have all these double coverages, have Roquan Smith running from the line of scrimmage, that opens up stuff underneath. And if I think they focus on Kelsey like they would in this kind of heavy game plan defense, I think that, again, opens up spots for Rice. The other one, same thing, crazy defensive looks, everybody running every which way. Look for Patrick Mahomes over 20.5 rushing yards.
That was going to be one of mine.
Always one of my favorite props, is especially against defenses like this where 3rd and 5, 3rd and 12. All right, Mahomes run for a first down. Everything gets funky on the back end.
I dig that. I like both of those. I was just going to go chalk and say Derrick Henry over 63.5 rushing yards. This was a team that became much better from a run defense perspective, the Kansas City Chiefs, like as the season wore on, but there were some hit and miss moments at times last year. I don't know that there's a ton of changes to look for there. So again, and I think they're going to try to establish the hell out of Derrick Henry in week one. It's a big reveal for the fans. It's a big reveal for everybody else. So I like your two a little bit more than mine, but that was the one I was going to go with.
It's try and true. You go against Spags or Todd Bowles, run the ball. It makes your life easier. It doesn't matter who your quarterback is. Just run the ball. It makes life so much easier.
All right, so the Friday game in Brazil, we've got Eagles versus Packers. This one's, I mean, just there's so many layers. I wish we could do another hour on this, but we will not do a Football 301 2-hour podcast on this podcast feed because contractually, wow. I'm not allowed to do it, Nate. Actually, if you want to dig deep on the on my ass here. Might. Well, you never know. But yeah, so this one's super fascinating. A high over under 48.5 point total right now. What are we looking for when let's start with when the Eagles have the ball? What are we looking at when the Eagles have the ball?
Oh, just something you and I have talked about, I feel like 40 times now, but especially against maybe this defense and some of the looks they'll bring. It's how the center Cam Jurgens plays along with Jalen Hurts and how this whole offense looks. There more motion, which isn't the end all be all. And I think there's other reasons why they limited motion. And I think it's because Jason Kelce didn't like motion and it changes the picture on everybody. So I'm curious if now he's gone that they let him do it now. And so it's just the Kellen Moore-ness of this offense. I can picture a lot of the things. Jeff Stoutland's still the offensive line coach. I can picture the run game. It's going to be very similar to what it's been. Kellen Moore is willing to run the ball, does a little bit of everything, run the ball. But his passing attacks over the years will use a lot of quick game. They'll use a little bit of everything, a little bit more straight dropback stuff. So I want to see how Hurts operates in that and how it just all looks. And it's a fun defense to go against, a reconfigured Packers defense with a good front. So yeah, trench battle, new Eagles offense. I just want to watch it all. Not saying good or bad. It's just a curiosity.
Totally. And I won't go too deep on this because I actually had a big long talk about it yesterday on the podcast with Sal. Like this was my number one week one reveal is what the Eagles offense looks like because of the molding of these two roles. And you're so right to bring up Jason Kelce. I know most people don't bring him up enough, and I know I don't as well, that he is like an outsized figure in this whole equation that we talk about. Like quarterbacks sometimes don't want the pre-snap motion, right? Aaron Rodgers famously doesn't want the pre-snap motion, any of that, because he wants to get up there and see the picture. Kelce is, he's like that level of center, number one, and like one of the best centers ever play, one of the most decorated, and he played for one team his entire career. Like if he has enough authority to be like, and relationship with Jeff Stoutland to say, we're not doing that. Like if I don't want it, we're going to take out parts of this offense because I don't want to do it. So that is a really good point that maybe that is, it's not all just a referendum on Hurts or anything like that. It could be because they have a truly transformative figure at center and they don't need to do all the pre-snap disguising and stuff. Although I think at the end of last year, it was kind of proven that they got to at least mix
a little bit.
They got to mix some of that in there. So I'm super fascinated to see what that looks like in this matchup. What about when the Packers have the ball? I'll just start here. It's a lot of what we talked about at the beginning, Nate, which is, I got to see the receiver rotation. We will be making maybe too big of an adjustment, but we will be making adjustment to rest of season rankings for these wide receivers after week one and the route participation. And, you know, if somebody's at north of 75%, you know, and is it just Romeo Doubs doing the normal Romeo Doubs thing? Like probably the best version of the sacrificial X, but still a little bit sacrificial X receiver-ish? Or is Jaden Reed that player that's going to be on the field for more than he just cannot just be a three receiver set player?
He can't.
He's too good. I said it 1,000 times this offseason. I guarantee you if by week four, the Packers, Matt LaFleur is really good at this stuff. So far be it from me, random goofball in his home office, to question Matt LaFleur. But I guarantee you by week four, if Jaden Reed's playing like 50% of the snaps or running a 50% route share because he's not on the field in two receiver sets, Packers fans are going to justifiably be like, what the hell happened to all the guy that did all that stuff for us last year? He was so good. So I can't imagine that he's going to be that player. But again, it's on my radar for rest of season rankings.
Yeah, no, it really is for me too. And just because they say he's a slot receiver doesn't mean that they don't move him around.
He's not slot
and do
only.
It's not slot only. It's a big difference. It's not like Tyler Boyd or Christian Kirk, you know, who are slot receivers, very good at it, but that's it. Like if you line them outside against press online, you get a little antsy with that. Reed can line up anywhere. His defined role and everything. It's just what seeing this offense go and seeing what it all looks like, seeing if Jordan Love ascends even more against this defense that I respect the hell of Vic Fangio. Still have some question marks about how this personnel fits all together. they don't have a lot of beef on the outside. You know, if they have Bryce Huff playing full time, he has been more of a rotational rusher in his career. They lost Devin White at linebacker, I believe. I think he's missing this week in an injury. They have, you know, multiple just question marks along the spine, which is the same exact question marks that I had last year with them. So I was wondering if the Packers just pound the rock, right? If they manipulate it with some play action stuff, if they really work that middle of the field, try and get those linebackers going every which way, some of the new faces going every way. It's where you want to attack this type of Fangio defense anyways, but especially with the question marks of personnel, we'll see how much that gets attacked.
Yeah, I love that. It ended up kind of high on Jordan Love this offseason in fantasy just because it's, well, I can't quite pick the receiver because I like a lot of the receivers. You know who's going to throw the ball to those receivers?
Right.
Let me just draft that guy. I ended up taking a lot of Jordan Love. He's one of like my guys at quarterback this year. So I think he's going to get off to a good start in week one. In fact, he's the one of my player props here. I'm going to take over Jordan Love 257.5 passing yards in this one because a lot of the matchup advantages that you mentioned. Again, I think this offense is going to get off to a good start. There are so many different ways that they can attack you because of all of these players. It's hard to pick a player that I like to do the scoring, but I do think Jordan Love is going to get going here in week one.
Because I'm a sicko who actually already knows who the ref crew for this game is, by the way, Ron Torbert and his crew. Who are a travesty to the reffing position, umpire position. Last year they had a whole bunch of new crew members and they just kept messing up game operation stuff, and it was just the most it was like a weekly basis, and now they're sending them to Brazil, so we'll see. But you just mentioned all these guys. We don't know who is going to catch the passes, which of the receivers is going to step up, which of the tight ends is going to step up for the Packers. How about the running back Josh Jacobs over 16.5 receiving yards?
He
gets the receiving prop for me because of this Fangio defense that is softer, that wants to play zone and make you work for it. A lot of play action in this Packers offense. We've mentioned those. Checkdowns to Josh Jacobs. He's a valid receiving checkdown auxiliary option. They're going to run a lot of play action like I think they will. They're going to push the ball. There's going to be some opportunities for him to catch the ball underneath, and especially against this type of defense, especially with linebackers that are a little iffy with him one-on-one against them.
And if you're looking to really hate your life and bet an under here, I do think Saquon Barkley under 15.5 receiving yards is interesting. I like
that. Do that every week.
And it might be safer to do the under 2.5 catches. You also get better odds because if he busts a big one, like, again, you're just going to hate yourself. And I'm all about betting on sports and not hating yourself. So that's kind of my general philosophy. I just think against this defense that we expect, and we don't know what Jeff Hafley's going to do yet, but we expect it to be more of a cover one, like some more man coverage single here high. And stuff, like single high. That's going to be AJ Brown time. You know, whatever they want to do from a motion and all this new Kellen Moore stuff, the bread and butter is still going to be, AJ Brown's over there, single high. I'm Jalen Hurts. I'm throwing that go ball to him. So that's going to be a lot of what the offense looks like as they try to integrate this new stuff. And it's still, okay, am I getting to the Saquon Barkley in the read, or am I taking off and scrambling? So maybe the under 2.5 catches is actually the way to go.
I like that a lot. I hit a Miles Sanders prop, I think, in the Super Bowl. I think it was under 2.5 receiving yards.
Oh, my God.
And I think he caught a ball for 2 yards or 1 yard or something like that, or a target went his way. And I was like screaming, but it was like one of the ones that I was like, I'm a sicko.
Yeah, you're a sicko.
Like that was a new level. It was under like 2.5 or 3.5 receiving yards. I really want to find it, but it hit. it hit. So that all works out in the end.
All right, man. I think that's all we got for today. This was a packed pod. We went through a lot of different things. As much as we're like, man, I just can't wait for the games to get here. It was fun to talk about. We talked about the games in a more real sense. We talked about these players in a more of a real sense. So appreciate you doing this with me, man. Tell the people what you got coming out on the site, Football 301, all the things.
Oh, yeah. So we have right now, should be coming out later today, today being Wednesday. So Wednesday or Thursday is I have a Patrick Mahomes Texas Tech film study, just kind of a what did we miss kind of thing. I'm trying to figure out exactly how to, package it all together. Yeah. But it's interesting. I got 3 games of film to watch. You know, I was checking him out. And really funny to watch what guy might go down as the greatest football player I've ever seen. First 3 throws I watched against West Virginia, airmailed all 3.
Amazing.
Sailed them way over the head. that was Drake May. They would talk about his footwork in 5 years before we could even see him the field. So it's funny how that works. But also have awards predictions, just like we did on Football 301, doing a kind of a written version of that. All that's come out. Then we have the preview pod coming out tomorrow as well, Football 301.
Amazing. Woo,
week one. We're there.
Week one, baby. Hell of a crossover episode, which we'll be doing these every week, Nate Tice. Appreciate the hell out of you for doing it. That is going to be all for us today. On Friday, Andy Behrens and Tara Roberts are going to join me to preview the rest of Sunday's action because week one is here. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you like the show, hey, we're all in a celebratory mood for week one. I would celebrate the hell out of you people if you left us a nice 5-star rating and review. 5 stars only. Don't say we love the show 4 stars. No, you love the show, leave it 5 stars. If you don't love the show, just don't pretend like you never heard this and just keep moving. But anyways, week one preview, it's coming up. What a time to be alive. On tomorrow's episode. Until then, we're out.